नमः ओम विष्णुपदाय कृष्णपृष्ठाय भूतले श्रीमते भक्तिवेदांत स्वामी नीति नामिने नमस्ते सरस्वती देवे गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेष शून्यवादी पाश्चात्यादिशुता शील प्रभुपाद की जय। हरे कृष्णा। ओम अज्ञान तिमिरांधस्य ज्ञानांजना शलाकया चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्री गुरवे नमः। श्री चैतन्य मनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूप कदामयं ददाति स्वपदान्तिकं। वन्देहं श्रीगुरो श्रीयुतपदकमलं श्रीगुरुन् वैष्णवांश्च श्रीरूपं साग्रजातं सहगण रघुनाथान्वितं त्वं सजीवं साद्वैतं सावधूतं परिजनसहितं कृष्ण चैतन्य देवं श्री राधा कृष्ण पदां सहगण ललिता श्री विशाखान्वितांश्च आजानुलंबित भुजौ कनकावदातौ संकीर्तनैक पितरो कमलायताक्षो विश्वम्भरो द्विजवरो जुगधर्मपालो वन्दे जगत्प्रियकरो करुणा हे कृष्ण करुणा सिंधो दीनबंधो जगतपते गोपेश गोपिका कांत राधा कांत नमस्तुते। जयतां सुरतो पंगो ममो मंद मतेर्गति मत्सर्वस्य पदां भोजो राधा मदनमोहन। दिब्बद वृंदारण्य कल्पद्रुमाधा श्रीमद् रत्नगार सिंहासनस्थो श्रीमद् राधा श्रील गोविंद देवो पृष्ठालिभि सेव्यो मानो स्मरामि। श्रीमान् रास रसारम्भि वंशी वट तटस्थिता कर्षन वेणु स्वनैर्गोपी गोपीनाथ श्रीस्तु तप्त कांचन गौरांगी राधे वृंदावनेश्वरी वृषभानुसुते देवी प्रणमामि हरि प्रिय। वंशाकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपा सिंधु भयेवच पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः। नमः ओम विष्णु पदाय कृष्ण पृष्ठाय भूतले श्रीमते भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी नीति नमस्ते सरस्वती देवे गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेष शून्यवादी पाश्चात्य देशतारुणे श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवाशादि गौर भक्त वृंद हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम 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 Hare Krishna. So this morning I mentioned that we will have a seminar on Brihad Bhagavatamritam. This is Brihad Bhagavatamritam. Brihad Bhagavatamritam. Brihad means great. And Bhagavat, Srimad Bhagavatam, Amritam. In simple words, we can say the nectarian expansion of Srimad Bhagavatam. We know of Srimad Bhagavatam, although Srimad Bhagavatam has 12 cantos and 18,000 shlokas, but Bhagavatam has been presented in a concise form. We can see Krishna's pastimes in Srimad Bhagavatam. They just briefly touched those pastimes. In various Puranas and Samhitas, those pastimes of Krishna has been elaborately explained. Like, we get Krishna is killing different demons. And who are those demons? We don't get the background. But in some Puranas and in some Samhitas, it has been elaborated. Who are those demons? And how they had been cursed to become demons. And how they had been delivered by Krishna. Krishna's devotee curses, like Narad Muni or other such great devotees, curse. Like for example, we know of the incident of Nalakuver and Manigriva. Nalakuver and Manigriva behaved in an improper way. And Narad Muni cursed them. And then they beg forgiveness, please forgive us, please forgive us, we made a mistake. But Narad Muni said, look, the word that has gone out of my mouth is bound to happen. So what I have said will happen. But Krishna will deliver you. You will be born as two trees in the earth planet. But where will you take birth? In Nanda Maharaj's courtyard. And Krishna will deliver you. And this way, we can see eventually the curse becomes a benediction. So devotee's curse eventually becomes a benediction. Lord Shiva cursed Rather, Parvati cursed Vritrasura, or rather, and as a result of the curse, Chitraketu became a demon. But the demon is a great devotee. Chitrakirti was a great devotee. And he was cursed to become a demon. And even though he became a demon, he was a devotee. He remained a devotee all along. And eventually he was cursed by Vajra. And apparently Indra killed him. He was killed by Vajra. But it was not that Indra killed him. In Bhagavatam, in Srimad Bhagavatam, it has been explained that Indra didn't kill Vritra. Vritra already left his body. Before Indra apparently killed, Vritra should have already left his body. And leaving his body, where did he go? He went to the abode of Lord Shankarshan. He was a devotee of Shankarshan, Balaram. So he got his place in the abode of Balaram, Shankarshan. So in this way we can see a devotee's curse eventually become a benediction. So most of the demons are actually individuals, exalted personalities, who are cursed by different brahmanas and saintly sages, devotees. And they acted as a demon. But where did they act? They acted in Krishna's pastimes. That itself is such a great fortune. To become a demon even in Krishna's pastimes is benediction. And then they were killed by Krishna. And the result is, they got liberation. They were delivered. They got elevated to Vaikuntha. Some even went to Golok. Brihad Bhagavatamrita will describe. All these demons are there in Golok Vrindavan. Keshi is there. Arishtasura is there. Kaliya is there. But they are all in Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan. Sometimes Krishna feels like going out to ride on a horseback. Now who Krishna uses as the horse? Keshi. Krishna sometimes plays his pastimes of subduing Kaliya. And actually it is Krishna sporting to ride on Kaliya's back. He rides onto Kaliya's back, Kaliya's head. He puts his uttariya, his chadar, on Kaliya's mouth and uses it like a rein. And he rides on the lake, like a boat ride on a lake. So this is how Krishna actually, the demons are there in Golok Vrindavan, in Krishna's eternal pastimes. So, anyway, the point is, Sanatana Goswami elaborated Bhagavatam, pastimes of Krishna in Srimad Bhagavatam, giving the essence in an expanded way. And that is Brihad Bhagavatam. Brihad Bhagavatamritam has got two parts. The first part is Narad Muni's search for the greatest devotee. Narad Muni is searching, who is the greatest recipient of Krishna's mercy? And then we see what happens through the search. We are going from one devotee to another. And we find that all the devotees are not admitting that they are the devotees. They are the recipients of Krishna's mercy. That is the nature of a devotee. A devotee never feels that he is a devotee. When somebody glorifies a devotee for his devotion to Krishna, glorifies him for receiving Krishna's mercy, devotee simply feels embarrassed In embarrassment, he looks down and then he starts to speak, no, I am not a devotee. That person is the real devotee. And are they flattering those people? No. They are proving why they are great devotees. In this way we find how Narad Muni's search is leading to the greatest devotee. And this search is taking us to Golok Vrindavan. The residents of Vrindavan are the greatest devotees. Among the residents of Vrindavan, the gopis are the greatest devotees. Among the gopis, Srimati Radharani is the greatest devotee. So in this way, we find the ultimate search ends in Srimati Radharani. She is the greatest devotee. A devotee's business is to serve Krishna. Devotee's business is to give pleasure to Krishna. And Radharani is the one who gives the greatest pleasure to Krishna because she is the personification of Krishna's pleasure potency. Ladini Shakti. Pleasure potency. All of Krishna's pleasure is provided by Srimati Radharani. So in this way, Srila Sanatan Goswami expanded Srimad Bhagavatam. And that's why we actually sang this particular verse from Shad Goswami Ashtakam. Nana Shastra Vichare Naika Nipuno. Very expertly consulting various scriptures. Nana Shastra Vichare Naika Nipuno. Saddharma Shangsthapako. The established one. Ultimate religious principle. The eternal religion of living entities. Saddharma Sangsthapaka. For the benefit of mankind. Lokanam Hitakarino. And therefore, Tribhuvane Manno Saranaka. Therefore, in all three worlds, they are respected and they are worshipped and they are taken shelter of. Whoever wants to make spiritual advancement must take shelter of the six Goswamis of Vrindavan. Book of Bhaktivinoda Thakur is saying in that respect, Rupo Sanatana Pade Dante Trinokori, Bhakoti Binodo Kore, Duhu Pada Kori, Kadia Kadia Bale, Amito Adham, Shikhae Sharanagoti Koro. Bhaktivinoda Thakur is saying, falling at the feet of Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami, in a very humble state of mind, Dante Trinokori. And Bhakti Vinoda Pari, Dhu Pade Dhari, holding on to their lotus feet, Bhakti Vinoda Thakur is appealing to them with tears in his eyes, crying, sobbing, that I am so fallen, I am so degraded. Please teach me the process of surrender and elevate me to the platform. Elevate me from my fallen condition. And how does one become truly elevated? The true elevation is to be surrendered to the lotus feet of the Lord. So, to receive the mercy of the six Goswamis is very, very important. Prabhupada time and time again reminded us that how we have to surrender ourselves to the Goswamis. Prabhupada translated Rupa Goswami's Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu as Nectar of Devotion to teach us how to become a devotee. And this Brihad Bhagavatamritam by Sanatan Goswami also has been translated by one of our very dear God brothers, Gopi Paranadhana Prabhu, who unfortunately left this planet. Unfortunately for us, but fortunately for him. Because when such a devotee leaves his body, he goes back to the spiritual world. Gopi Paranadhana Prabhu is a very brilliant devotee. He was American. He was an American from New York. But he became a Sanskrit scholar. He did not come to India to study Sanskrit. On his own, he learned Sanskrit. Another such person is Kushakrata Prabhu, also an American, just Sanskrit on his own. And Kushakrata Prabhu translated volumes after volumes of books. I think his translation goes up to more than 100 volumes, 100 books, 100 scriptures, Vaishnava literatures. So Gopi Paranandana Prabhu was a brilliant scholar. He was an editor of BBT, taking care of Srila Prabhupada's translations, and very meticulously going through every single verse and its meanings. And in course of that, he learned Sanskrit. So much so that after Prabhupada left, he actually got the responsibility to write, to translate and write the commentaries on the rest of Srimad Bhagavatam. Prabhupada translated up to the 13th chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam. At the 13th chapter of the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. And the rest of Srimad 10th canto is very vast, like it has 80 chapters, and then 11th canto and 12th canto he translated along with Hridayananda Goswami Maharaj. And then eventually he translated this Brihad Bhagavatam. What an amazing service. And we can see he has such expertise in both the languages, Sanskrit and English. Such beautiful writing. And Srimad Brihad Bhagavatamritam also has another very beautiful aspect. Srila Sanatana Goswami wrote Brihad Bhagavatam. And actually Brihad Bhagavatamritam is a conversation between Parikshit Maharaj and his mother, Uttara. And this was narrated, this conversation was narrated to Janamejaya, King Janamejaya, by sage Jaimini. So that is how we got this literature. Jaimini spoke to Janamejaya. Janamejaya is Parikshit Maharaja's son. And Janamejaya, when he heard that the snake Takshak, due to the bite of this Takshak, his father died, Parikshit Maharaj died, he decided to kill all the snakes, wipe out all the snakes from this universe. And he performed a sacrifice that would kill all snakes. So this was the power of sacrifice. And due to the sacrifice and the huge fire of the sacrifice, all the snakes were just flying in and getting burnt. And then eventually he was pacified by the exalted personalities like Lord Brahma. That don't do that. Like, after all, everything happens by the arrangement of the Supreme Lord. So, by killing all the snakes, you are not going to really serve your purpose. Give up your anger. Don't try to take revenge in this way. In a similar way, we remember that Dhruva Maharaj also was advised. When Dhruva Maharaj's brother was killed by Yaksha king, Dhruva Maharaj went and started to kill all the Yakshas. He decided to wipe out all the Yakshas, finish all the Yakshas. But then he also was advised, no, that's not the right thing to do. Take this kind of revenge is not befitting a devotee. Anyway, so this way Janamejaya was pacified. And then Jaimini Rishi told him the history of his ancestors, his forefathers. And that is Mahabharata. Mahabharata was also spoken by another sage, another disciple of Brahma, another disciple of Vyasadeva, name is Vaishampayan. But his Mahabharata, the Mahabharata that we generally read, is Vaishampayan's Mahabharata. But that Mahabharata is promoting just Karmakanda section. That is not the Mahabharata that speaks of devotional service to Krishna. But Jaimini's Mahabharata was. So, Janamejaya admitted that I heard Mahabharata by Vaishampayan, but my heart was not satisfied reading, hearing or reading that. Now, when you spoke Mahabharata, it really enlightened me from my within. And I want to hear more and more about it. And then as an essence of Mahabharata, Jaimini, as the essence of Mahabharata, Jaimini gave this description of extended Srimad Bhagavatam or Brihad Bhagavatam. So these are all factual happenings. Parikshit Maharaj was about to leave his body, being cursed by a Brahmana boy. And Parikshit Maharaj immediately went to the bank of Jamuna, bank of Ganga. And he was preparing himself to leave his body. And so this is the attitude of a devotee. Parikshit Maharaj's attitude was very befitting. He felt that when I was in my mother's womb, when I did not have any ability to defend myself, to protect myself, at that time the Lord Himself came and protected me from Brahmastra, the most powerful weapon of this universe. The most powerful weapon is actually Brahmastra. And that weapon is all destructive. and Krishna saved me. So now, if Krishna wants me to go back, to leave this body, fine, I will leave this body. I'll leave this body. So he didn't decide, he didn't make any effort to protect himself. He just sat there, and all the sages and saintly personalities appeared there with the news that the king is about to leave his body. And various sages, various exalted personalities started to give advice. And then came Sukadeva Goswami. And just by the sight of Sukadeva Goswami, although most of them did not see him before, recognized that this is a very, very exalted personality. So, from the appearance, one can actually recognize a great saintly personality. But it needs a saintly personality to recognize a saintly person. Materialistic persons look at the handsome feature. Oh, he is very attractive. Especially a man becomes very attractive, a handsome man becomes very attractive to women. The women recognize a great handsome personality. But the saintly personalities may not even look at him. Like all these beautiful personalities that are worshipped all over the world, in today's world, big film stars, movie stars, actors, actresses. Yeah, they're very handsome, very good looking, very beautiful. But the saintly personalities won't even look at them. But the saintly personalities recognize the saintly qualities of a person. So they recognize that this is an exalted, really exalted personality. They saw he doesn't have any external consciousness. He's so absorbed in Krishna consciousness that he doesn't have any external consciousness. He doesn't care how he's being treated. He doesn't even wear any clothes. He's devoid of shame. He's not thinking, oh, what people will think of me. Let them think whatever they want. And that is their attitude. It's moving around naked. Just as I mentioned this morning, the four Kumaras walking around naked. But of course, that shouldn't be imitated. The activities of such great personalities shouldn't be imitated. Sometimes we find some people are walking naked. They think that, well, if I walk naked, people will think that I am a great personality. I am like Sukadeva Goswami. But if the heart is not really pure, the saintly personalities won't even look at them. Actually, nobody wants to look at them because it's so embarrassing. Why in public in this world move around like that? Rather, if you move around like that, people won't come to you. And if they don't come to you, they won't be able to listen to Krishna Katha. Therefore, we see Prabhupada went to America. Prabhupada, of course, he was dressed like a sannyasi. But at the same time, when it was winter and too cold in New York and other places in America, Prabhupada put on an overcoat. So Prabhupada didn't give any importance of being undressed or dressed. His consideration was, whatever is practical, let's do that. And that's what we are doing here. Whatever is practical we are doing, we are using microphone, we are having this nice arrangement so that you all can come and hear. I hope you are not falling asleep. That's a good sign. I noticed in the past that when I spoke philosophy, people fell asleep, devotees fell asleep. But when I spoke stories, then they all woke up. Therefore, I thought that I'll give seminars based on stories. And I can see all of you are awake. It makes me feel happy. So this is our goal. Come, listen to Krishna Katha. Understand who are you? Understand who is Krishna? Understand what is your relationship with Krishna? Understand what's the benefit of developing your relationship with Krishna? Now just consider, like, I mean, if Prabhupada didn't do what he did, if first of all, in India, some people had the understanding, even many people, like sometimes we speak to Madhva Sampradaya, and there, they have a strict rule that one should not go out of India. One should not travel across the ocean. And they give us credit for that. Their Madhva Acharyas, they give us credit, give Prabhupada credit. Oh, Prabhupada is so practical. He went out of India, across the ocean, went to America, where he didn't even know what to eat. And there, he started to spread Krishna consciousness. And look at the result. As a result of that, Krishna consciousness is spreading all over the world. The Vedic wisdom that was limited only in India is now available all over the world. And those who are born in those countries, they're becoming experts. Exponents of this Vedic wisdom. So much so that they are teaching others. So much so that they are translating the books into English. That books that were only in Sanskrit, available in Sanskrit. In this way, the Lord's mercy is spreading. If we have something valuable, should we keep it to ourselves or should we distribute it? What should we do? Those who think that they'll keep it to themselves, they're called kripanas, they're called miserly. And those who distribute it to others, they're called mahajanas, great souls, great personalities. So, how many of you want to be kripanas? How many of you want to be misers? And how many of you want to become mahajanas? Very good. So distribute this wonderful wealth of Krishna consciousness. Jare dakho tare kaho Krishna upadesh. Just as I didn't have this knowledge. I was in total ignorance. I didn't have any knowledge whatsoever. And by coming in contact with Srila Prabhupada, I received this knowledge. Now that I have it, what does Prabhupada want me to do? Does Prabhupada just want me to stay in one corner of Mayapur, which was the place where I actually joined, and which is a wonderful place, Holy Dham? Should I just have stayed in Mayapur? Prabhupada didn't want that. Prabhupada wanted us to go out. The knowledge that he gave us, he wanted us to go out and distribute. And the result of that is so wonderful. Now that also brings back one thought in my mind. Maybe I should tell it again afterwards, but I am telling it now because it's in my mind. I was told that this thought actually came because this morning Bhakti Prem Maharaj was telling me, "Oh, only so few have come. Many others are coming tonight. And many more will be coming day after tomorrow and so forth. And most of them will be coming on the 15th or 16th. Now I was thinking, why? I'm giving the seminar. And if they are really interested for the spiritual advancement, spiritual benefit, they all should have come here to attend the seminar. If they are coming, why not come for 5 days instead of 2 days? And that is a big difficulty in spiritual life. When one thinks, I have understood everything. I don't need to hear anything. I know everything. That is the greatest danger. While consulting Brihad Bhagavatamritam, we will see that. The great devotees are eager to hear. The great devotees, even Brahma is willing to hear. Lord Shiva is willing to hear. The residents of Vrindavan are willing to hear. The residents of Vaikuntha are eager to hear. Now, we have become so exalted that we don't have to hear anything. This point I will make very strongly during this thing. Like, then why did I come here 7 days before? Am I any less busy than any of those people? I can take the time to give the seminar and come here. I can take the trouble to fly from all the way from America just to come here. Now, why didn't I come just for 2 days and attended Prabhupada Memorial Festival? Naturally, the purpose of my giving this seminar is to benefit you all. Now, if you don't want to hear, then why should I take the trouble? So anyway, remember that. Like, when there is an opportunity to hear, at least when you are coming, you are taking your leave, you are making the arrangements to fly from different parts of the world, then why come only for 2 days? Why not extend it? I mean, the announcement was there a few years back. Everybody knows that in Ujjain we are going to have this seminar on the occasion of Prabhupada Memorial Festival. So couldn't you take a few days extension of your leave? Anyway, the point is, those who don't want to hear, what can be done? But those who want to hear, they will derive benefit. That we see when Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur was in Parikrama in Vrindavan. Many devotees went to see the different temples and different places of Krishna's pastimes. Prabhupada didn't go. Prabhupada just sat by Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur and listened. And Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur appreciated that, yes, he likes to hear. And we can see the result. Like, out of so many devotees, so many disciples of Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, what Srila Prabhupada achieved is unique, incomparable. Why? Because of his devotion. And the devotion was generated from hearing. When one is serious about spiritual life, he will be interested in hearing Krishna Katha. Those who are not interested in spiritual life, they will go to all these kinds of mundane aspects of... They are in ISKCON. There, many of them are involved in management and many things, but they don't have any taste for hearing. So that means they're missing out. Anyway, like, the purpose of this seminar is to impart whatever little I have got from Srila Prabhupada, whatever understanding or you may say realization I received due to Srila Prabhupada's mercy. And this is how the transcendental mercy flows. The disciple hears from Guru and then in course of time, he becomes a guru and imparts the knowledge. That is how the line of disciplic succession flows, via medium. Does every disciple become a proper recipient? No. Only those who have developed devotion in a real way, whose heart has become purified, who is willing to receive this mercy in the form of sound vibration. So to go back to Brihad Bhagavatamritam, Jaimini is telling Janmejaya, what happened with Parikshit Maharaj? Parikshit Maharaj heard Srimad Bhagavatam from Srila Sukadev Goswami and he was about to prepare himself to leave his body. But his mother came to him and asked him, my son, you are leaving. I saw with rapt attention you listened to your spiritual master, Sukadeva Goswami. For 7 days, no break, no consideration for eating, no consideration for sleeping, just with undeviated attention, you listened. Now please tell me what you understood, what you received, what nectar you received from him. That has already made you immortal. So only a devotee can ask a question like this. Uttara is a devotee of Krishna. So therefore she's asking. And then Parikshit Maharaj started to narrate to her. And that is Srimad Brihad Bhagavatam. Like, he is describing that in Prayag is considered to be the king of all places of pilgrimage. Therefore, Prayag is called Tirtharaj or Prayag Raj. Which is, how many of you know where Prayag is? Prayag is today's Allahabad. And so, there, in the month of Magh, a very grand festival takes place. And so many saintly personalities assembled there. Narad Muni also was there. And so Narad Muni was seeing that all these exalted personalities are glorifying each other, saying, "Oh, you are the greatest recipient of the Lord's mercy. You are the greatest of all devotees." And the other person would say, no, I am not a devotee. I couldn't even get an iota of devotion. You are the greatest devotee. Or they were saying, he is the greatest devotee. So Narad Muni began to wonder, everyone is saying, everyone else is a great devotee. So how to figure out who is the greatest devotee? So when Narad Muni was thinking in that way, then he saw that a Brahmana, who was actually the leader of all the Brahmanas in that area, surrounded by other Brahmanas, came to the bank of the Ganges and very elaborately arranged the worship of the Lord in the form of Shalagram. He made a beautiful singhasan there and decorated it with flowers and then offered various articles to the Lord. And then he offered those remnants to the Brahmanas and Vaishnavas present there. And then he fed the other people, those who were there, even the outcasts, untouchable people, chandalas and others, and offered them the prasad of the Lord. Then offered the prasad of the Lord even to the animals and insects. And then, along with his family, he took the remnants of the Lord. So seeing his devotion, Narad Muni felt that this Brahmana is the greatest devotee. And so then, when he was about to leave that place, after honoring prasad, he took the Shalagram Shila and he was about to leave, then Narad Muni approached him. And Narad Muni started to exclaim, "This is the greatest devotee of the Lord. This is the greatest recipient of Lord's mercy. This is the Supreme Lord Vishnu's most dear devotee." Then he ran up to the Brahmana and declared him the recipient of Krishna's highest mercy. And he embraced him. But the Brahmana, hearing that, actually, Narad Muni told him, "O leader of the Brahmanas, it is you who have received Lord Krishna's greatest favor. After all, you have such wealth, property, generosity, and personal opulence. O wise one, in the best of the holy places, we have now seen for ourselves that you are using all these assets exclusively to establish pure religion. Then the Brahmana replied, O Master, what signs of Krishna's mercy have you seen in me? So this is the attitude of a devotee. You are saying I'm the greatest devotee, but what sign of devotion you saw in me? Like I'm just worshipping the Lord because that's my occupational duty. I'm a Brahmana and my business, my occupational duty is to worship the Lord. And as a consideration of my duty, I'm worshipping. So what is the devotion that you're seeing me in me here? Who I am but a most wretched person? How much charity am I able to give? What opulence do I possess? And how have I ever reciprocated with the Lord in devotional service? Then the Brahmana started to tell Narada Muni. But the king in southern India, he is the greatest devotee of the Lord. His kingdom has many temples. He is the true recipient of Lord's mercy. Saintly mendicants come from all over to his kingdom. From all directions, along with pilgrims and other visitors, they wander happily, sustained by food that has been offered to Krishna. Near this king's palace, the personality of Godhead is being worshipped in the most gorgeous way. He is present there in his Satchidananda Vigraha form, in his form of eternity, knowledge and bliss. He has kindly assumed a form that is not moving, non-moving. He is stationed at one place. Although he is a Supreme Personality of Godhead, he is just staying at one place. He is not moving. Although his form is Satchidananda, eternity, knowledge and bliss, he is standing there, non-moving, to receive the worship of his devotees. And centered around the Lord, all the time various festivals are going on in that kingdom. So, the king respectfully feeds all the residents of the country and the many foreign visitors with the remnants of Lord Vishnu's worship. And all these saintly personalities come from different places to live there because they appreciate the king's devotion, the way he worships the Lord and the way he worships the saintly personalities. And being attracted by his devotion, they all settle down there. And as a result of that, what happens? That kingdom became a place of pilgrimage. Place of pilgrimage is the place where saintly people reside. Wherever there are saintly personalities, that place is the place of pilgrimage. That is a real place of pilgrimage. They come out of eagerness to see the lotus-eyed deity of the Lord, to relish the food and other special remnants from the Lord, and to obtain the association of spiritually advanced personalities. The saintly people like the association of other saintly people. So that's why they settle down where the saintly personalities are there. And what is the result of that pious activity of the king? This is a very important thing to note. As a result of this devotional attitude of the king, the earth yields food grains without being tilled. They don't have to till the land. The food grows automatically from that land. Rain falls just enough for people's comfort and for the cultivation. And whatever fruits, vegetables and clothing one desires are easily obtainable there. So life becomes very easy. They don't have to work hard. Now we can see, because the world has become so sinful and devotion to the Lord is practically missing in this world, what has life become? Like people have to struggle so hard to earn their livelihood. They have to work morning till night just to maintain their family. And now what is happening is just one person's income is not enough. So both husband and wife have to work. Previously, the husband used to work and the wife used to take care of the house. I could never, to tell you frankly, I could never imagine my mother going to an office working. It's completely beyond my imagination. And I think that's the case with most of the elder generation. Bhakti Prem Maharaj, can you imagine your mother going to an office? How many of you, anyway, that's as I was saying, but now it's a common thing. And we are seeing that it has become a common standard that everyone has to go out and work. The girls have to go out and work. They're going to study and they think, well, I'm studying and if I don't get a job, then what's the use of my study? I spent so many years getting the degree. And only those who are very opulent, when the husband is a rich one, then only the wife doesn't have to go to work. So the intelligent girls will get married to somebody who will take care of them in such a way that they don't have to go out and work. So point is, those days, because of the devotion to the Lord, life was so easy. They didn't have to endeavor for anything. Food was easily available. Other necessities of life like clothing, housing, everything was very easily available. But now they have to work so hard. And it is becoming harder and harder. Like it's not only in countries like America and Europe. It's happening in India also. Like, they have to get an apartment in mortgage. And they have to keep on paying for 30 years. So, see, they're stuck for 30 years. Because if they can't pay, then they'll be kicked out of that house that they have paid, they have acquired. And they may have paid for 29 years out of 30 years, but if they default in paying for 3 months, the house will be taken out from them. So this is how human beings are becoming entangled in this material nature. Do you think that's a very nice way to live? No. And many of our devotees are very smart. Although they got their degrees, although they had good jobs, but they realized that job is actually slavery. So they don't want to take up that job. They want to join ISKCON. People do not understand why they are behaving like that. Especially, often I find the parents cannot understand. The parents come and complain that, oh, he was earning so much money. We took so much trouble to educate himself. He was such a bright boy. And now he gave up everything and joined your institution. Please send them back home. Please send them back home. So what is our answer? Many of them know here. My answer is, well, you speak to him. We don't want to keep him. You speak to them and deal with them. And they get frustrated. At least in India they accept the sons have become a sadhu, joined ISKCON. But in the West they think that we are brainwashing them. We have drugged them or given something that they cannot think anymore. They have become dodos. And that's what has happened. They have been brainwashed. In that respect, Prabhupada said, to begin with, they didn't have any brain to be washed. I am giving them the brain. And even if they had some brain, and if it was dirty, and if it was being washed, what's wrong with that? Washing is not a bad thing. Washing is a good thing. And that's what is happening. Yes, we are brainwashed. But for our own benefit. And the citizens in that country were treated like the king as their own children, as his own children. So that is how they felt. And as a result of that, they were completely surrendered to the king. They performed their own social duties and are devoted to Lord Krishna. So, upon hearing about the glory of the king, Narad Muni became excited. Oh, yeah, he's such a great devotee. Now here we also have to understand one thing. Like, as I was saying, that when a devotee is saying that I am not a devotee, he is a greater devotee, there is a reason behind that. So what is the reason the Brahmana is saying? That I am a Brahmana, my duty is to worship the Lord. So that's what I am doing. So what's so great about it? But this king is a Kshatriya. He's a warrior. He's a king. He doesn't need to worship the Lord. But this is the sign of his devotion. He's such a great devotee that in spite of being a king, he is serving the Lord with such earnestness, with so much sincerity. The Narad Muni arrived at the kingdom of that king. And Narad Muni started to glorify the king. You are the real recipient of Krishna's mercy. After all, your kingdom is so opulent. It has the best citizens, endowed with most excellent character, religiousness, prosperity, knowledge, and devotion to God. And he elaborately described the king praising his greatness, and Narad Muni was embracing him again and again, as if he found the object of his worship. However, what did the king do? Hearing these words of Narad Muni, the king bowed his head down in embarrassment, as if he heard something which was not at all pleasing to hear. A personality like Narad Muni is telling that he is such a great devotee. So the king felt very embarrassed and the king started to tell Narada, O sage among the demigods, I am a human being with a short span of life. Little opulence and little to give others. What do I have? After all, I am a human being. What is my position? And what is the duration of my life? And I have no independence. I am constantly attacked by fear and ruled by threefold miseries of material life. How can you say that I am a recipient of Krishna's mercy? Why do you wrongly consider me an object of Krishna's compassion? And then the king started to tell Narad Muni that the demigods are the real objects of the Supreme Lord Vishnu's mercy. They have effulgent bodies and are always worshipable by men. They are sinless. They are fixed in goodness, free from distress, and always happy. They act and travel wherever they like. They give their blessings by granting what their devotees desire. This is the position of the demigods. So compared to them, who am I? And you are calling me the recipient of Krishna's mercy. I mean, what kind of mercy that you are seeing in me? The real recipient of Krishna's mercy are the demigods. Look at them. Their body is so effulgent. This body is not affected by any material calamities. They are situated in the mode of goodness. And they are free from distress and always happy. They can travel anywhere they like. They can go anywhere they like. And they give blessings to their devotees. They fulfill the desires of their devotees. They're so powerful. Whatever their devotees desire, okay, granted. They did give that. Their food is the nectar of immortality. Their food is nectar that gives immortality, which does away with such misery of death, disease, and old age. These threefold miseries are not there anymore. Death, disease, and old age. They don't grow old. Because they drink nectar, they never die. Their body never becomes, they never become old or wither. And due to their good fortune, they live in the realm of heaven, which humans on earth can attain only by perfect pious activities. And then he started to describe that among the demigods, Purandar, Indra is the greatest. His devotion is so great that the Lord has become his younger brother. Bamandev or Upendra was born from the same parents of Indra, Kashyap and Aditi. He rules the three planetary system for 71 celestial ages, a length of sovereignty no mundane king could earn, even by 100 horse sacrifices. Uccheshrava is his horse, Airavat is his elephant, and his cow Surabhi Nandini can give unlimited amount of milk and can fulfill all desire. And his garden is the resplendent Nandankanan, most beautiful garden with Parijata trees, the desired trees, whose flower, the flower of Parijata, can give whatever one wants. So that is how wonderful Indra's garden is. Those trees adorned with desire-yielding creepers assume whatever forms one may like. Even a single flower from those trees can fully satisfy one's desires. Whether for wonderful songs or music, splendid dances, bright clothing and ornaments, good food, or anything else, whatever one desires, one can immediately get from just the flower of Parijata. How can I ever describe Indra's greatest fortune? The personality of Godhead Vishnu has taken the form of Vamandev and became his younger brother. Lord Vamandev encourages Indra by shielding him from dangers and by accepting in person the elaborate worship Indra offers. But of course, you already know this and much more. You already know that. You know the position of the demigods. You know the position of Indra. Because you yourself are a resident of heavenly planet Sarvabhauma. And upon hearing that, what did Narad Muni do? Narad Muni immediately wanted to go to Sarvabhauma to see Indra, especially how the Lord is being worshipped by Indra personally. Prior to that, he saw the Lord is being worshipped in his deity form. But now the Lord in his personal form, as Vamanadev, is accepting Indra's offerings, Indra's worship. So, Narad Muni became eager to find out like how great is the devotion of that king and how wonderfully the Lord is blessing him. So, then what happens? Now Indra will go and Narad Muni will go and meet Indra. So, this is the first chapter of the first canto of Brihad Bhagavatamrita. So, I'll invite questions. If anybody has any question, can ask. This, I thought this question was from Udayananda Prabhu, but it came from Mukunda Madhav. Mukunda Murari came from Jaipur. Thank you for coming. Kindly accept my most humble obeisances at the dust of your lotus feet, Guru Maharaj. Prahlad Maharaj was pure devotee. Then how he comes under the influence of mode of passion, anger, and decides to kill all the Jakshas. Okay, this was not Prahlad Maharaj. This was Dhruva Maharaj. And Dhruva Maharaj was a king. So as a king he was in a mode of passion, therefore he's a Kshatriya. So, Kshatriya can be angry. Very angry. So angry that if anybody stands in front of him in opposition, he can chop his head off. Udayananda Prabhu had a big question written in big letters. To attain heaven, you have to follow regulative principles. Why would people perform austerities and penances to attain heaven. When you just perform the same austerities, four regulative principles, and attain the eternal spiritual world. Those who know about the spiritual world, they don't want to go to heaven. Only those who do not know, those who are still interested in sense gratification. So for them it's a big deal. Oh, in heaven, there is somras. You drink and don't get hangover. And the somras gives strength and power and youthfulness. And then what to speak of nectar. And in heavenly planet, there is apsaras, the beautiful girls. And you can dance with them and have a lot of fun with them. So they think, well, that is the place to go. See, those who are interested in mundane sense gratification, their understanding is only limited to that. But in heaven, they'll get it in a greater degree. Just like when Prabhupada was in Switzerland, Prabhupada mentioned that many Indians will think that this is heaven. If they come here, they'll think this is heaven. The place is so beautiful. The women there are so beautiful. So much sense gratification. But it takes only a devotee to understand. And that's what we'll find here. Especially in the next chapter, next part, Gop Kumar's journey. And as a result of that, it has been described, that the elevation to heavenly planet to a devotee is like a phantasmagoria, not real, a pie in the sky. Akash Kushum. Can there be a flower in the sky? No. It's only imaginary. So heavenly enjoyment is only imaginary. Not real. Phantasmagoria. Next is question from Radhikeshwari. Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj. Thank you for the wonderful seminar. You mentioned about King Janamejaya doing yajna to kill all snakes and Dhruva Maharaj trying to kill all the Jaksha in spite of the fact that they were great devotees. Eventually, they were pacified. If in that connection, how and in which way must a practicing neophyte devotee try to overcome disturbances that come their way in Hare Krishna, in practicing their spirituality? Oh, this is from Radhika. I thought so. Gita Kirti Radhika. I just didn't see the back of it. I went to the straight to the next page. I thought I saw PTO. Okay. Good question, very good question, Gita Kirti Radhika. Like, we see that even in great devotees, there are certain discrepancies. Now, if the great devotees become affected by that, what to speak of a neophyte devotee? So, therefore the advice to the everyone is tolerate. Srinadopi sunichena tarariva shavishna. Become more humble than a blade of grass and become as tolerant as a tree. And that is the business of a devotee. So, and that's what we find. Dhruva Maharaj, Janamejaya, when they came to their senses, they were lamenting. Oh, why did I do that? Why did I give in to the mode of passion? Why did I give in to this mode of ignorance? So that is the mood of a devotee. So the point is, even a devotee deviates, he comes back to the proper state of consciousness. Right? Momentarily, they may be affected. It happens. We are surrounded by the illusory energy of the Lord. So, it happens. But then, immediately after that, or soon after that, we correct ourselves. Or we should correct ourselves. And I'm sure you have noticed it often. You have done something at the spur of the, due to the impulse of the spur of the moment. And then you think, oh, why did I do that? Why did I do that? I feel so bad that I did that. So these are the ways of overcoming those impediments. So we must correct ourselves as soon as we become aware of it. Then Radhikeshwari, Guru Maharaj, how to overcome the mentality of familiarity that I know these past times while hearing Krishna Katha. Good. So, yeah, this is one thing that often happens. Oh, I know all that. What's the point in going and listening? So I'll answer this question. When you read Bhagavad Gita, how many times you read Bhagavad Gita? Radhikeshwari. More than one time. So, why do you read Bhagavad Gita? You read it once. Why do you read it again and again? You read it again and again because each time you read, each time you get new realization. Similarly, when you hear about the same topic, you will get newer and newer realization, and you will hear newer and newer realization of the speaker. So that is why by hearing, we can always benefit. But at the same time, I'll also mention that those who give Bhagavatam class don't make it so boring that the listener will think, oh my God, why did I come here? So make it a point to give the class properly. Prepare yourself. Time and time again I tell you. Prepare yourself before giving the class so that those who are going to listen to the class will benefit. Instead of thinking, oh my God, what a waste of time. The guy doesn't even know what he's speaking. And it happens. I have seen devotees sitting in Bhagavatam class, giving Bhagavatam class. But he himself doesn't know what he's talking about. So why waste your time and why waste others' time? So this is a question from Shubham from Toronto. Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj, this is not a question, but a humble and sincere expression of gratitude for taking so much trouble to come here and bless us with your most wonderful association and imparting to us such beautiful Krishna Katha. Thank you so very much. Your mercy is deeply appreciated. Thank you very much, Shubham. But in the class, I was also chastising So it was not always Krishna Katha. Did he appreciate the chastising also? So that is the thing, you know, like when a speaker speaks, like he generally makes it a point that it will penetrate into the heart of the listener. Anyway, so thank you very much. And thank you for taking the trouble of all the way coming from Canada to here. Hare Krishna. So this question is from Karunika Devi Dasi. Respected Guru Maharaj, Dhanavad Pranam. All glories to you, Guru Maharaj. You say demigods are not sinful, but we heard in many stories of Srimad Bhagavatam, Indra made so many aparads to devotees. How to understand these stories, please tell us. You see, there is a difference between sin and aparad. Like aparad is committed on the platform of devotion to a devotee. But to be elevated to heavenly planet, you have to have piety. With sin, as long as one has sin, one cannot go to the heavenly planet. When one is completely free from sin but has a lot of piety, then only he can be elevated to heavenly planet. And when the piety is finished, khine punne marta lokam vishanti, from heavenly planet, he falls down to this world of suffering, world of death. But Indra sometimes commits offenses like, and as a result of that, Indra is punished. So, for example, Indra offended Durvasa, and Durvasa cursed him. Oh, you're so proud of your opulence, your position, you lose everything. Lakshmi, who is the giver of opulence and fame and position and beauty, he will leave. She will leave. And as a result of that, Indra lost his position in heavenly planet. So, yes, when they commit offense, when they act sinfully, they lose their piety and they lose their position in the heavenly planet. Next question is from Radharani Devi Dasi. What causes a devotee to lose the taste of hearing Krishna Katha? What causes a devotee to lose the taste for Krishna Katha? From devotee and even one's own spiritual master. It is due to Vaishnava Aparad. Well, I will say the reason for losing that is influence of Maya. Maya makes one think, oh, come, enjoy. And this enjoyment can be of various ways. Come, enjoy me. And that enjoyment can be falling asleep. Come, enjoy me. Desire for prajalpa. Come, enjoy me. In this way, there are various ways that Maya allures us. And one thinks that this is a better way to utilize my time than hearing Krishna. Next one, Sarada Devi Dasi. Please accept my obeisances. Guru Maharaj, do demigods do not die after what is that? After complete sarada? Or devastation? Oh, after complete devastation. Okay. At that time everyone dies. The demigods die only at that time. And how do they, what is death? Death is like falling asleep. So the demigods die in two ways. One is they lose their position in heavenly planet, come to the earth planet as an ordinary human being, and then they, but that happens not the demigods as such, but to the residents of heavenly planet. And the other is they are at the time of annihilation, when Brahma falls asleep, they also fall asleep. Now, is there any difference between sleep, falling asleep and death? No. Death is like falling asleep. Only difference is, when you fall asleep, we wake up in the same body. When we die, we don't wake up in the same body. We wake up in another body when you are born. So, thank you all very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Gaur Premanande Hariye. Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Namaste Sharashati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatta Vishuddha Srila Prabhupada Ki.